Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Harvard history professor Joyce Chaplin's new book, The Franklin Stove, an unintended American Revolution, is the story of this singular invention and a revelatory new look at the founding father that we thought we knew pretty well. We follow Franklin as he promotes his stove in Britain and France while corresponding with the various experiments who discovered the key gases in the Earth's atmosphere, invented steam engines, and tried to clean up sooty urban air. Joyce Chaplin is the James Duncan Phillips Professor of Early American History at Harvard University, where she also holds affiliations with the Graduate School of Design and Center for the Environment. The name of the new book is The Franklin Stove, an Unintended American Revolution. It is published by FSG, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Joyce Chaplin to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Oh, good morning, and thank you so much.
A delight to have you on the program. How did this decision to take a single object and a single and singular thinker in Benjamin Franklin and have that be your starting place?
Oh, I agree that it looks like it's a little episode in a famous life and something done by someone who is famous for his inventions. But I don't think people know why Franklin started his career as a stove inventor. I didn't. I was originally going to write a very short little essay about how he developed his first stove, and I kept looking at the history, and the essay grew and grew, and so now I have an entire book about Franklin inventing not just one stove, but five stoves that he worked on for about 50 years of his life, so half of the 18th century. And with the big question that in the end the book focused on, the big question being, can you invent your way out of climate change? Franklin developed his first stove during a very, very bad winter, 1740, 1741, during what's now called the Little Ice Age, a period of cooling, a natural cooling, so exactly the opposite of what we have now. But a comparable problem in terms of desire to adapt to the new circumstances and maybe mitigate them, make them better.
What was for him, the initial impetus to want to work as an inventor on creating a stove?
It was the recurrence of bad winters. So 1740, 1741, within a series where it just didn't keep, it kept being cold. Things did not seem to be trending in a positive direction. And meanwhile, Franklin is very concerned that his adopted colony of Pennsylvania is running out of firewood, running out of trees in settled territory. And he's concerned that there's a need for conservation, which is why he developed the first stove and kept working on it, in order to generate more heat with less fuel, which he thought was the whole object. If things were getting cooler and there were going to be more consumers who needed energy in the form of firewood, conservation was going to be necessary, and so this iron stove that he first invents was meant to tackle both problems.
When you think of, I guess I'm interested, before we go much further, for you to put this into a context of Franklin as an inventor, of how much this is a one-off as opposed to very consistent with the way that he would invent.
Yeah, he continues in his life, of course, being both a scientific investigator and an inventor, with often paired consequences that he establishes some principle about how the natural world works, and he has an invention to make human navigation of that world easier. So in his stove, he first did experiments in his own family's house in the parlor to demonstrate how heat could be more efficiently produced and the warm air circulated throughout the entire space. So in some sense, really what Franklin was inventing was not necessarily the stove, but the artificial atmosphere, the comfortable space that you can live in. You don't have to stand or sit right next to the fireplace to be warm. And, of course, this is what we continue to inhabit today, the artificial atmosphere indoors that's protected from whatever temperature it is outside. So Franklin uses his investigation of this interior atmosphere to examine the natural world and the natural atmosphere beyond. He describes the way heat moves in a room according to convection, how hot air is expanding and moving, and that's exactly the principle that Franklin uses to describe how storms move up the Atlantic coast, how the Gulf Stream operates by moving warmed air from the Gulf of Mexico out over a greater part of the Atlantic. And then he makes this device. He invents something that will establish greater comfort for human beings at a time when maybe that wouldn't have been an obvious expectation, but uses examination of material principles to do that. And that's exactly the same protocol he'll follow when he investigates electricity, both indoors and out, and eventually in terms of developing a lightning rod that will protect houses and ships from lightning strikes, preventing fires and damage in especially urban areas, protecting humans, again, by understanding material principles. So Franklin continues to do this, that he links scientific investigation with some practical device that is intended to make life better for people.
You mentioned there were several iterations of the STOW 5, I believe you mentioned. How did it evolve as an invention?
We know that there were two versions of what's called the Pennsylvanian fireplace, and that's usually what people think of when they think of the Franklin stove. It was actually an insert, a metal insert that goes into an existing fireplace to modify it without having to tear the whole thing out or buy a freestanding stove. There were at least two versions of that, and possibly a 2.5 version that accommodated stovepipe. Those were designed in Philadelphia to burn wood, but Franklin moves abroad. He lives in London for two extended periods to act really as a colonial lobbyist, and he quickly learns that the major fuel in London is no longer wood. Britain has been burning coal since the Middle Ages, and so he develops two fireplaces or two stoves in London that are designed to burn coal, again, minimizing the amount of fuel necessary and therefore household expense while generating an entirely warmed room. The very last stove he develops, he does in Paris when he's ambassador for the United States, drumming up support and getting loans for the American Revolution. And toward the end of his stay there, there's a very cold interval, and the Paris authorities come to him asking, can you please invent something that will generate greater heat with less fuel? And he obliges. I'll note that this is right during the negotiations for peace. So they kind of have him over a barrel, right? What's he going to do? Say, no, I'm not going to help you. But he does draw up a design for his smallest heater yet. It's like a little space heater that can rotate and fit in an existing fireplace and burn very small amounts of coal, keeping people warm.
I thought one of the most fascinating parts of the narrative is this, his work as an inventor, but also as a scientist, and how you look at the correspondence that he has with the leading thinkers of his time. And this is just not what I think sometimes when I was growing up during the bicentennial, you know, sort of like, oh, goofy Ben. oh, there he is again.
Yeah, right.
That here's this guy who's really putting solid research and thought into what he was doing. And I'm interested, I guess, in turning that into a question as to how he chose who he chose to correspond with and the information he was ultimately seeking.
He has a pretty wide correspondence. I don't know whether he had a principle of omission. He would not correspond with certain people. But it is the case that some of these famous scientific investigators from Franklin's era become friends or really regular correspondents. So, for instance, with Joseph Priestley, who's the first to isolate and describe oxygen, though he doesn't name it, also with Jan Ingenhaus, a physician who was the first to describe photosynthesis. And these are precisely principles that Franklin thinks are key to how all living things need certain kinds of air that they respire. And this meshes into his concern over the dirty air that is produced by burning coal. So there are some ways in which, right, his scientific correspondents map onto his own interests, and they continue to inform how he thinks about his own inventions and his own investigations. Sometimes people come and find him. So, for instance, he's called in as a technical consult for Boulton and Watt, who are the inventors of the major steam engine that's used in the early Industrial Revolution. He knows some people in their circle, and that probably impels them to think about who they might talk about for the circulation of fluids, which steam is, but also efficient use of fuel, which steam engines can benefit from. To go back to the start of your question, he was just a consummate multitasker. I'm kind of amazed that he obviously has a very important political career, but is always keeping his scientific interests sort of humming alongside whatever else he's doing. He sends an interesting letter back to Boulton and Watt saying that he would have gotten back to them sooner, but he was detained by the business of the Stamp Act, which, again, he was a paid colonial lobbyist. That should have mattered to him. So there's occasional sign that he has to prioritize. But he always has about, 25 things going at once. And the science is sufficiently important to him, and I think culturally important at the time, that it's not something he ever leaves behind, even as he gets more and more drawn into public affairs.
There's a chapter in the book called Fueled by Fossils, and it's fascinating because there is a correspondence in regards to coal. But then the next chapter is the American Revolution. So, I mean, this is really... like, this is all of this was happening at the same time.
The eventful era.
Right, which is quite remarkable, and yet, as you say, multitasking.
Yes, and the unintended revolution of the book's title is the Industrial Revolution, which gets forgotten. I mean, I'm not saying the American Revolution in its conventional sense, it doesn't matter, it doesn't have consequences, but this is exactly the era when people are adapting everyday life to the burning of coal, the fossil fuel, that chapter refers to, and that Franklin designed three of his five stoves to burn. So it has become an invisible factor, out-prioritized by the American Revolution. As with Franklin's apology to Boulton and Watt about his advice about the steam engine, that he was busy with the business about the Stamp Act. He's called into Parliament and he's grilled for a very long period of time as the local expert on colonial affairs. And again, it makes sense that that would have been his priority, but really, given the historical consequences for the Industrial Revolution, including our warming climate now, you could question whether that's really the way we might want to think about what happened in the past.
Let me just mention, there's also a very interesting part of the book about Pennsylvania and the Keystone State, which is really interesting as well. We are out of time, but I want to remind folks that the name of the book is The Franklin Stove, An Unintended American Revolution. The book is published by FSG. Joyce Chaplin, I thank you so much. It's been a delight speaking with you. I thank you so much for sharing your research and work with us. Have a beautiful day, and thank you very much, and best of luck with the book.
Thanks so much. Great for the conversation.
Thank you. Again, the name of the book is The Franklin Stove by Joyce Chaplin. The Roundtable continues.